this life is o'er, I'll fly away to a home on God's celestial shore. I'll fly away. I'll fly away, oh glory, I'll fly away. When I die, hallelujah, by and by, I'll fly.
Welcome to the radio program Genesis and the Gates of Hell. Everyone knows the book of Genesis, even if they haven't studied it, but the gates of hell is a less known phrase that is in the New Testament. It is the phrase used by Christ when he was with the disciples at Caesarea Philippi near the Sea of Galilee. Christ was telling his disciples that the church will go on the offensive against Satan, and Satan will not prevail, but the church will prevail. That is what this radio program is about. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Is that true? For a Christian, it is truth. In John chapter 1, it says, "All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men, and the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not." When your children come home from school or college with the notion that the stories in Genesis are untrue because science says it is not true, how do you respond? When you ask, "What are you talking about?" they will generally respond, "Science says so." Your response should be that science has changed, but the Bible has not. You can no longer reject the stories of Genesis because science disproves it, because recent scientific discoveries reaffirm the stories in Genesis. Well, here we are on another session of the Genesis and Gates of Hell show. I'm Marshall Bandy, and Greg Grayson's here, and we're continuing on Genesis 19, but where we left off. There's so much here in chapter 19, we couldn't cover it in one. I am not sure that we will cover it in two. And as with most chapters of the Bible, if you want to dig deep enough, you almost never get through. So we're going to pick up on, I guess, beginning about verse 10. Greg, is that a good place to pick up from last week?
It's good as any. I think we got down to about verse 10 or thereabouts.
And well, let's read it. It says, "But the men inside reached out and pulled Lot back into the house and shut the door. Then they struck the men who were at the door of the house, young and old, with blindness, so that they could not find the door." Now, here, obviously, we're talking about Sodom and Gomorrah, particularly, in this instance, Sodom, and that's where Lot was, and that's where the angels came, and that's where Lot met them, and so he's invited them into his home, and these reprobate men in Sodom surrounded the home and wanted to have their way with them.
Mm-hmm. Young and old.
Young and old.
So there was no discrimination as to who was lived a debaucherous life in Sodom. All of them. And I think it's interesting that it says all the men. I don't think all the men of Sodom came, but I guess there was enough of them that surrounded the house, trying to take the angels. And I believe that. That although Lot thought he was protecting the angels, he found out that actually the angels were coming to deliver Lot, which I thought's a bit ironic in that approach. And so they put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house. And, you know, as I read this, I'm really down on Lot. I really am. I think Lot was found lacking in a lot of ways. And Lot, instead of, you know, when the angel said, you know, we gotta get out of here, we've got to go, we're going to destroy Sodom, and then the next morning it says, and the angels hastened Lot, saying, "Arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters, which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city." And here we go. And while he lingered, while he lingered. Lot did not want to go. The angels, says, laid hold upon his hand and upon the hand of his wife and upon the hand of the two daughters, and the Lord being merciful unto him, and they brought him forth. In other words, they forcibly grabbed him and drug him out of the city by his hand because Lot lingered. He didn't want to go. And why? Why did not Lot understand that the angels were going to destroy this city? And they told him that. They said, get up out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city.
Well, it said, and I think I did read that, that they were struck blind.
Yes. Yeah, that's the angels struck all those men blind when they were trying to get into the house.
And in Acts 13:11, I'll go back a couple of verses prior to that. Acts 13:9, then Saul, who was also called Paul, filled with the Holy Spirit, looked straight at Elymas and said, that's E-L-Y-M-A-S, you are a child of the devil and an enemy of everything that is right. You are full of all kinds of deceit and trickery. Will you never stop perverting the right ways of the Lord? Now the hand of the Lord is against you. You are going to be blind, and for a time you will be unable to see the light of the sun. Immediately, mist and darkness came over him, and he groped about seeking someone to lead him by the hand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are several. This is not the only place in the Bible where the Lord chose to strike somebody blind. That's why I pointed this out. This is something that the Lord does on occasion.
I think poor Saul had his experience with being struck blind on the road to Damascus.
That's right. And he had scales from his eyes.
From his eyes, that's right. Yeah.
So anyway, this...
It says here, they wearied themselves to find the door. They couldn't find the door. They didn't know where they were once they were struck blind.
In 2 Kings, Elisha prayed that these people be struck blind, and they were. In Deuteronomy 28, it says, curses of disobedience, and they were struck blind, etc. So
I think it's interesting, too, that what you read there, it says that, you know, you won't be able to see the light of the sun. He's taking light away from you. And we already found out that the sun doesn't produce light, right?
It's Jesus that is the way, the truth, and the light.
Yeah, God said, let there be light, long before he created the sun and the stars. So what we see is reflected light, correct? I think that's interesting, very interesting. But I'm down on Lot today. I think Lot was a compromised soul.
It's in the next verse 12. The two men said to Lot, do you have anyone else here? Sons-in-law, sons or daughters, or anyone else in the city who belongs to you? Get them out of here, because we are going to destroy this place. The outcry of the Lord against its people is so great that he has sent us to destroy it. Now, the two men are the angels, and those are the angels, the same angels that went to see, we assume they're the same two angels that went to see Abram, because in the, as you pointed out earlier, not during this program, but during a break, that's the last thing in chapter 18.
Mm-hmm.
Was those angels were sent to see Lot.
Yeah. The God tarried with Abram, and Abram prayed and got it all the way down, negotiated with God all the way down to 10 people. And God said, I won't destroy them if I can find 10 righteous people. And apparently he could not. And I think that's a testament, again, to Lot's ineptitude, to his compromise. He had two daughters, apparently. We know this. And he also went out and spoke to his sons-in-law, which we don't know, but it makes me believe that he had more than two daughters. He had two daughters living in his home that had not new men yet. And he apparently had some sons-in-laws which married his daughters. So if he had two daughters living at home, and he had two daughters that were married.
Now, the ones that were living at home had never known
right,
a man.
Never known a man.
So he obviously had two other daughters.
Right. And he had two sons-in-laws. That makes, what, six? If he had four daughters, four sons-in-law, no, four daughters and two sons-in-laws. I'm trying to add that up. Six, and him and his wife, if they were all righteous, that only makes eight. But there wasn't 10 righteous in the whole city.
And we don't know that that was all of his family.
We don't. But we do know
We do know that the sons-in-law did not come.
They did not come, nor the daughters.
That means that the sons-in-law's wives did not go.
That's right.
So not only did Lot lose his wife, we'll cover that in a mm-hmm. minute, but he lost his two daughters,
mm-hmm.
or at least two daughters, mm-hmm. and his sons-in-law
right.
when Sodom was destroyed.
And later, which we'll get to as well, but I think it's a poignant point to make, when his two daughters get him drunk and lie with him and get pregnant by him, I think that's just a testament to how compromised his daughters were. You see,
yeah, they got him drunk, and yeah. they were the ones that committed the lewd act.
But you know, Marshall, how can you? I cannot accept the fact that Lot did not know
what was going on.
What was going on? I can't accept that fact. Not just once, but twice. And it's a little bit of a stretch to believe that both daughters got pregnant the first time they had sex with their dad.
That's a statistical anomaly.
It really is. So it probably may have went on more than just one night and then the next night. Let me read you what Peter says in chapter 2. It says, and turning the cities of Sodom, this is verse 6, beginning at verse 6.
This is in the New Testament.
Yeah. And turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that after should live ungodly, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. Now, the word that's used there for filthy conversation is anastrophe. And that refers not to just our conversation, but to our conduct or our manner of lifestyle. So I think Lot was overtaken by the wickedness of Sodom. We see he encamps towards Sodom, and now we see he's a civic leader in Sodom. He owns a house in Sodom. He lives within the city walls. He's got daughters that are married to Sodomites. And not only that, but we see that he shirks his parental duty and offers his daughters to the Sodomites to be done with as they see fit to protect these strangers. So I think that he had been overtaken by the wickedness of Sodom, and he was not living wisely, and he compromised his life by remaining in Sodom. Lot knew what righteousness was. He had lived and traveled with Abram. But we never see where Lot built an altar to God, do we? He didn't arrive at the city, at the gates of Sodom, and build an altar to the Lord and call on him. So I think that the lesson that we have to learn here from Lot is that, well, let me just ask this question. Can there exist a difference between belonging to God and enjoying the fullness of covenant fellowship with him?
It's difficult to envision that.
We see Abram had full covenant relationship with God. We see Lot belonged to God. God had mercy on him on Abraham's account and saved him. But Lot was by no means enjoying the fullness of God's covenant. As a matter of fact, after Lot left Abram, did God tell Abram to look up and look around? I'm going to give you everything now. God gave Abram the covenant. Lot didn't experience that covenant. He didn't experience that full relationship. And we find that not only did Lot's daughters take advantage of him, and vice versa, most likely, but we don't see Lot mentioned other than in Peter once. We don't see him mentioned again. His life left no real legacy. He disappeared.
Well, that's not entirely true.
Right?
Because we haven't gotten to the end of this chapter.
Well,
when we talk about Moab and
yep.
the Assyrians
yep.
and the Ammonites,
mm-hmm.
all of whom are a result
mm-hmm.
of the illicit relationship
right.
between Lot and his daughters.
Yep, between.
Those are the
yep.
children.
That's right.
Of Lot. He and all of the wars that went on
yep.
went between Israel, the with David,
mm-hmm.
King David, were with Moabites,
mm-hmm.
Ammonites, Philistines, Ammonites, etc. So I'm jumping ahead.
That's fine. That's fine. I think that's a good point. You got Moab and Ben-Ami, who were the two children.
But what you have to look at the behavior of Lot and what his descendants were like versus the descendants of Abraham,
mm-hmm.
which went to Egypt and were slaves for 400 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back and wander in the desert for 40 years. And then they take over the land of Canaan. That's a different kind of people.
And you'll also find that God commanded David not to take the territory from the Moabites or the Ammonites. He said, leave them alone. Don't touch
them. Because I have given that
mm-hmm, to them.
To the Ammonites.
Yeah.
Because of Lot.
And the Moabites and the Ammonites, the Ammonites were an evil culture,
oh,
desperately
yeah.
wicked, and they were constantly at odds with Israel. Constantly were.
And cousins.
Mm-hmm. So God blesses, what does it say, he sends the rain on the good and the wicked, right? He blesses both. But I don't think Lot enjoyed a full covenant relationship with God. I think we see that although God was faithful to Lot in some ways, that Lot missed out on a lot.
Well, God is always faithful.
Mm-hmm.
God was faithful to Lot. It was Lot that was not faithful
That's right.
to God.
Mm-hmm.
So it's we're so used to using these terms. We got to remember that it's Lot that's acting this way. It's not God.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. Lot sacrificed what he could have. And I think that applies to us today, that we sacrifice the blessings God has stored up for us with disobedient behavior and with ungodlike a lifestyle, that we are a barrier to our own blessings.
I'm going to go ahead and read this. We've mentioned it. So Lot, this is 14. So Lot went out and spoke to his son-in-laws, who were pledged to marry his daughters. Spoke to his sons-in-law, who were pledged to marry his daughters.
It may have been the two daughters that was in his home. Could have been.
But they were already his sons-in-law.
Yeah.
So if they were already his sons-in-law, perhaps he was already married to, we just don't know.
We don't know. Commentaries vary on that.
That's right. He said, hurry and get out of this place, because the Lord is about to destroy the city. But his sons-in-law thought he was joking. With the coming of dawn, the angels urged Lot, saying, hurry, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you will be swept away when the city is punished.
And while he lingered, I think that says a volume right there. He was not in a hurry to leave Sodom. And I think that means that Lot looked, remember this. What did he do when Abram said, pick out where you want to go? What did Lot do? He acted out of greed. He acted out of sight. He looked around and he saw the plains there in front of Sodom, and he chose that for himself. So Lot was materialistic, and he looked for wealth, and he looked for the lush valleys, and he didn't care about anybody else. He only cared about himself. And so he didn't leave. He didn't want to leave. His wife certainly didn't want to leave, because what did she do? She looked back. She was disobedient, which goes to show you how much of a godly leader he was for his wife.
And we have to remember, she probably came with him from Ur.
Most likely.
And those children were exposed to Abram during that whole travel,
mm-hmm.
all that time.
Mm-hmm.
They were hardly believers. They were hardly righteous people.
Yeah. And not only were the angels saving him, but then Lot had to be disagreeable to where they wanted to take him. He says, no, don't take me there. Take me to Zoar. Don't take me to the mountains.
He didn't want to leave it completely, did he?
No, apparently.
But he didn't stay in Zoar. He wound up in a cave.
Yeah. Well, he was at Zoar, and then I guess he started getting worried that they may come and get him. Or it may have been that he was worried that God would come and destroy Zoar after he got through with Sodom and Gomorrah. And so, therefore, he went to the mountains and lived in a cave. That's correct.
In Numbers chapter 16, verse 21, it says, separate yourselves from this assembly so that I can put an end to them at once. But Moses and Aaron fell face down and cried out, O God, God of the spirits of all mankind, will you be angry with the entire assembly when only one man sins? Then the Lord said to Moses, say to the assembly, move away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, Abiram. Moses got up and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. He warned the assembly, move back from the tents of these wicked men. Do not touch anything belonging to them, or you will be swept away because of all the sins. So they moved away the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Dathan and Abiram had come out and were standing with their wives and children and the little ones at the entrance to the tents. Then Moses said, this is how you will know that the Lord has sent me to all these things, and so forth. So anyway, they were swallowed up by the earth,
mm-hmm.
and disappeared. This again.
Is that the rebellion of Korah?
That's right.
Where they came to Moses and says, you're taking too much on yourself.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
We need to have some of this authority.
Yeah.
Yeah, and God swallowed them up, split the ground and swallowed them. I bet that scared everybody else.
Well, this is something that we should discuss. These are things in the Old Testament. I guess you'd call them miracles, actions of God. What has happened since Christ to change that, or is God still acting here on earth and we're just not writing it down? How did Hitler wind up losing? How did the Soviet Union wind up being dissolved? What miracles do we look at and say, how did this happen?
When did God stop writing the Bible? Is that your question?
When did he stop performing these miracles?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're still living in a period of grace without a doubt. And I think the next epoch will come when Christ returns or when his spirit is removed from the earth.
And how things happen in individuals' lives. Why do some people, what is it that he does to keep us alive for 60, 70, 80 years and others that we knew and when we were very young and they died very young?
Mm-hmm.
How God acts, I think God is very active in the world and in our lives today, just like he was active in Lot's life and Abram's life.
You know, 3,000 years I think the major difference is that in the Old Testament, God was acting, he wasn't acting as a personal God. In other words, he was acting regionally, locally, with the tribe of Israel. But after Christ came and the veil was rent, now God is, well.
Well, one difference is they were not indwelt with the Holy Spirit.
That's my point. It's God's home now is with me.
Yeah, there is no more temple.
There's no tent. He's not up in the heaven. He wants to be my roommate.
There's no traveling tent that goes around for 40 years
nope.
in the desert tabernacle where he tabernacles
yep.
with us with
yep.
fire at night and cloud by day.
And I don't have to communicate through the Pope or through a saint or through an intermediary to talk to him. I walk with him. See, what he's done is he's restored
now what
that.
You can do is you can quench the Spirit.
I think Lot quenched it quite well.
That's right. You can quench the Spirit. You can grieve the Spirit.
That's
Those
right.
are the two things you can do to the Holy Spirit in your own body. You can grieve it or you can quench it. There are two verses that deal with that. So if things aren't going exactly right in your relationship with God, you should take a look at whether or not you are grieving or you are quenching the Spirit in your own body.
And I would say that if things aren't going well with your life and you belong to God, you might want to look at what you're doing to get such discipline come upon you.
Oh, you mean God still disciplines people?
Well, like a master with a whip.
That's right.
You don't want to be at the end of that whip. Yeah, he disciplines those he loves.
So anyway, we're not saying that if you quit smoking, everything in your life will be perfect. There's actually no commandment to say don't smoke.
No.
No, there's not. You're supposed to be good to your body, but my point is what you do in life, what your lack of clean habits is not the thing that is going to determine your righteousness. It's not going to determine your salvation.
No.
But God gives you a brain, and you are supposed to do what's good for you, God, what's good for your neighbors, love your neighbor as yourself. And if you don't, you can look around in this area where there are homeless people sleeping under a bridge,
mm-hmm.
and you could go talk to them for about 5 minutes, and you could figure out probably a half a dozen things that they are doing that grieve and quench the Spirit
right.
if they are believers.
So the lesson, do you want to belong to God, or do you want to enjoy the fullness of a covenant relationship with him? We can limit the blessings that God has in store for us with our behavior and our disobedience. And I think that not only occurs here in this short life on this earth, but I have to think that the treasures that are laid up for us in heaven will be affected by our disobedience or our obedience. You know, R.C. Sproul was asked once if he would see John MacArthur in heaven. And he said, no, I won't. And they said, oh, my goodness, you don't think John MacArthur will make it in heaven. He said, oh, no, no, he'll just be so far up in the front that I won't be able to see him way back in the back.
With that thought, I think we've got to end the show. We're out of time. All right. We'll see y'all next week. We didn't get as far on this as I thought we would.
Y'all have a good week. Make good decisions. We are not mighty by the world's measure, nor wise, nor of noble standing. And yet God has called us out as a royal priesthood, that we should show forth his truth and declare his glory. Though our program rejoices in seeing the handiwork of God's creation, and we stand amazed at his order and intelligent design, we do not rest our message there, nor do we seek to persuade or convince you by the wisdom and science of this age. For we are not here to prove God by secular means, nor add to the sufficiency of Christ crucified, which is the power of God unto salvation to all who believe. Until our next broadcast, may the Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace.
Some glad morning when this life is o'er, I'll fly away to a home on God's celestial shore.